I want to ask you if you would please to turn in your Bibles to the Gospel according to John, chapter 12. And the title of this message is Brokenness, Part 2. In our ongoing study of the book of Exodus, Brokenness, Part 2, the process. Last week we talked about brokenness, the principle. This week, brokenness, the process. Now, you know, a great man of God was once asked by a friend how he had learned to make so many good decisions. And his reply was, I learned to make good decisions by having made so many, what? Bad decisions. That's right. And you know, one of the things I have come to learn about us as human beings, one of the things I've come to learn about the human race in general, and it's true of all of us, is that we all want the product, but nobody wants the process. Everybody wants the product, nobody wants to pay the price to get there. We all want to make good decisions. It's just that nobody wants to go through the process of making all the bad decisions that it takes to learn how to make good ones. Now, the same is true in brokenness. As Christians, we look at the benefits of being broken. We study the principle last week, and we look at that, and we embrace it, and we say, oh, yes, God, that's what I need. However, that's the product. Nobody wants the process. The process of getting us there, we recoil from. Because that process that leads to brokenness is bloody. And it is painful. And for me to tell you any different would be a lie. It is difficult. However, the product is worth it. Do you hear what I said? The product is worth the process. You remember that. D.L. Moody, we talked about him last week and how God broke this man, how in great difficulty and great agony God put him through the mill and God shattered this man and released him into the powerful man that he became. Moody wrote this of that experience, and I quote, he said, I thought I had power. I had the largest congregations in Chicago and there were many conversions. In a sense, I was satisfied. But then as the result of those two old ladies and their prayers for me, I began to cry out as never before. I really felt that I did not want to live if I could not have this power from God for service. And after God shattered Moody's life, Moody wrote, I went to preaching again. The sermons were not different. I did not present any new truths, but now hundreds got converted at every meeting. Moody said this, listen now, I would not now be placed back where I was before. If you gave me all the world would simply be as the dust on the balance. What's Moody saying? He was saying the process hurt, but the product was worth it. And you know, the process that leads to brokenness may be painful, but no one that God has ever broken, no one has ever said they were sorry God did it. No one that I know of has ever regretted it or wished they had gone back or wished God had never done it. Because on the other side of brokenness, there is new intimacy with God and new power with God that's not to be regretted. Now we talked about brokenness, the way of blessing, the way of fruitfulness, the way of power with God. And I want to talk to you this morning about the process. How does God break people? If God breaks you, how's he going to do it? Let's talk about that. But before we do, let me review just a little bit. Not everybody was here last week. And even if you were, folks forget sometimes. So let's review, all right? We started talking about brokenness because we were talking about Moses. We're studying the book of Exodus. And in the book of Exodus, Moses is broken. God shatters this man's life. He takes this man at 40 years old in Exodus chapter 2. And Moses goes out to lead his own exodus, and he fails miserably, and he goes off to 40 years on the backside of the desert. And when God is finished with him at the end of those 40 years on the backside of the desert, what we find is a different Moses. God took a man who was self-reliant, self-sufficient, self-trusting, who relied on human logic, human wisdom, who knew nothing of waiting on God, and God revolutionized that man. Transformed him into a broken man of God whose trust and reliance and wisdom and strength was now rooted in God, whose impetuous fleshly zeal had been replaced by a waiting on God for God to do God's work, God's way, in God's time by God's power. God took Moses down to bedrock. He knocked all the props out from under this man, and he taught Moses what it meant to depend upon Jesus plus nothing. And that's what brokenness is all about. Brokenness is that process where God knocks all your human props out and teaches you to depend upon Him in every area of your life. Where He replaces your self-sufficiency with dependence on His sufficiency. Where He replaces your self-reliance with reliance on Him, and your self-wisdom with reliance on His wisdom, and your self-will with a surrender to the will of God. Now, some folks have said, well, you know what happened to Moses was just mellowing out. You know, everybody grows old. When you grow old, you mellow, you know. And so really, I mean, we need to see this as just mellowing. Well, I want to respond to that and say a couple things to you. Number one, it is not true that everybody who grows old gets mellow. I mean, I have seen some pretty crusty old geezers in my time. You know what I'm saying? That is not automatically true. Second of all, brokenness happens even to young folks. It's not just for old folks. Moses happened to be 80, but other folks have been young people. And third and finally, may I say to you that mellowness is a strictly human process. You can be mellow and you can still be totally unbroken and self-willed. But brokenness is a spiritual process whereby God shatters the self-sins of your life. Moses just didn't mellow. Now, he may have mellowed, but that's not what happened here. Moses was broken by God. And for so many of us as Christians, brokenness is a totally new concept. We never have even heard of it or thought much about it. And yet here in John chapter 12, Jesus says that brokenness is the key to power with God and serving God. Look with me, verse 24 of John 12, where I ask you to turn. Truly, truly, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abides alone. But if it dies, it brings forth much fruit. He that loves his life shall lose it, and he that hates his life in this world shall keep it unto eternal life. What's Jesus saying? Jesus is saying that Christians are like seeds, that inside of that hard outer kernel is the life. But the life of that seed is no good unless it can get out. And it can't get out until the shell is broken. And that Christians are the same way. When the Spirit of God comes into our life, when we give our life to Jesus Christ, He's inside of us, but there's that hard outer shell of self. And the Spirit of God cannot pulsate through our life and reveal Himself and manifest Himself through our life until that shell's broken. And so the real issue for us as Christians is not whether the life of God is in us. It is. The real issue for us as Christians is, can the life of God that's in us get out so that it can affect the lives of people? Can it flow through us? And Jesus says the only way that can happen is for that outer shell to be cracked open like the kernel of a grain of wheat. We also use the illustration of electricity, that we're the wires. God's power is the electricity, and that God can only work through wires that have low resistance. And that part of the goal of brokenness, really, if we want to put it another way, is to reduce your resistance to the power of God flowing through your life. Is the Spirit of God able to flow through me freely and without hindrance? Am I a wire with low resistance or with high resistance? These are questions, sooner or later, that every Christian who's serious about God's got to ask himself. Now, I know I've spent a lot of time reviewing this morning, but I did so because this is such a vital concept. It is so important that you understand what it is we're talking about in order for what we're going to say this morning to make sense to you. I want to talk to you about the process. How does God break a Christian? You need to be broken. That's what we talked about last week. Now, how is God going to do this to you? Well, I've got a little outline I want you to follow. I have so much to share with you this morning. I'm serious. I don't know how I'm going to get it all in, but we're going to try. Ready? And I got a little outline. You ready? Here it is. I want you to take some notes. Number one, God's technique. Number two, God's target. And number three, God's tools. You like that? I alliterated. It took me half an hour to do that. I hope you folks appreciate that. All right? God's technique, God's target, and God's tools. Now let's talk about them in that order. God's technique. God employs two strategies to break a life, and they're not mutually exclusive. In fact, actually, they're not either or, but they work together. The first is a process. Nobody is ever fully broken. Nobody ever gets to zero resistance. Now, the less resistance there is, the more that God can use you, but nobody ever gets to zero. And so brokenness, in one sense, is an ongoing, lifelong process. And God employs the gradual process of bringing trials and struggles and difficulties and heartaches into your life in order to enhance and deepen your brokenness as you go on through your life. Brokenness is a lifelong process. But secondly, now listen carefully, even though brokenness is a lifelong process, God's plan also calls for at least one bedrock experience for every Christian, such as he gave Moses. Do you hear me? At least one. I didn't say only one. I said at least one bedrock experience like he gave Moses. One experience that knocks every single human prop out from under you. One experience that brings you to the utter end of yourself. One experience where God shatters all your self-reliance and all your self-sufficiency. Listen to me now. One experience where God forever alters your view of yourself, your view of God, your view of ministry. Brokenness isn't complete with this one bedrock experience. In fact, this is really where brokenness starts. God can't put the process into action until he's given you one of these. But once you've had one of these, you look at all of life differently. And you might say, well, how will I know when God's done this to me? Brother, sister, all I can tell you is, when God does that to you, believe me, you'll know it. You will know it. If you haven't seen, I go to a drugstore here. I'm not going to tell you which one because I'm on tape. But anyway, we go to a drugstore here in town, and right in the drugstore, right by the checkout counters in the one I go to, is this little video that you got these two people boxing. Have you ever seen that video? Well, anyway, they got this guy, and he's always going, body blow, body blow, body blow. It took me 2 weeks to figure out what the thing was saying. I body blow, blah, blah. Finally, I figured out it's body blow, body blow, body blow, and this guy must deliver 10,000 body blows a minute. I mean, it's incredible. But then they have one punch where you can knock the other guy down. All right? And so what in essence I'm saying to you is here is that God delivers the knockdown punch, and then he starts the body blows. It's obvious you guys don't go to the same drugstore I go to. Forget it. Listen, if you're ever in a drugstore and you see that machine, would you please think of this message? All right? All right. Well, all of them don't work as well as others, so every illustration's not great. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make to you is God starts his whole thing off with a knockdown punch. And then he gives you body blows as you go along. But it all starts with the knockdown. And that's what this is. Now, Moses had this. Moses utterly failed. He utterly failed. And then he went out into the wilderness for 40 years on the backside of the desert. This is where God shattered this man. And out of it, we get a Moses who emerges with a totally different view of himself. In place of all of that self-trust and all of that self-reliance is now an inadequacy and a distrust of himself and his own wisdom. And now he sees God different. In the place of all of that fleshly arrogance is the fear of God. And now he sees ministry different. He doesn't try to pull it off in the energy of the flesh anymore, but now he knows what it means to do ministry in the power of God. Oh, Moses wasn't totally broken. Moses wasn't totally broken. But God, through that shattering blow, had forever changed his perspective on life and on himself and on God and on ministry. And then Moses' life just becomes a chronicle of God deepening that brokenness as the years go on. We could give you some other examples. How about Peter? You know, Peter said, Lord, though all be offended at you tonight, I shall not be offended. Lord, he said, though I should die with thee, yet I will never deny thee. Remember when Peter said that? Would you flip back with me to Luke chapter 22? I want to show you something. Luke chapter 22. What did God do to Peter? Well, I wanted to read this for you. Luke chapter 22, verse 54. Then they took him, that is Jesus, and they led him and brought him into the high priest's house. And Peter followed afar off. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the hall and they were set down together, Peter sat down among them. But a certain maid beheld him as he sat by the fire and earnestly looked upon him and said, "This man was also with Jesus." And he denied it, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." And after a little while, another saw him and said, "You are also of them." And Peter said, "Man, I am not." And about the space of 1 hour after another confidently affirmed, saying, "Of a truth, this fellow was with him, for he's a Galilean." And Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you're saying." And immediately while he was speaking, the cock crowed. Now watch. And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. Man, that gives me goosebumps. Can you imagine that? Here's the Lord in his trial, Peter out in the outer room. And all of a sudden, the minute that cock crowed, here's the Lord turns and just looks at Peter. Man, wonder what that must have felt like. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said unto him, "Before the cock crows, you shall deny me 3 times. Watch. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. In one fell swoop, God shattered this burly old fisherman. In fact, Peter was so utterly crushed that he left the ministry altogether. John chapter 22 tells you that Peter went back to fishing. And the Lord had to go get him, bring him back into the ministry. Look, God busted this boy. I'm serious. He took this guy right down to the bottom. And the Gospels end with a broken Peter. Oh, but the book of Acts picked up with a different Peter. Oh, he's got the same bold personality, all right. But noticeably absent are all the self-sins that you see in Peter in the Gospels. And now there's a Peter that has the free-flowing, pulsating power of the Spirit of God through his life. What happened? I'll tell you what happened. Was Peter totally broken of self? No, but God had delivered the knockout punch, the knockdown punch, the shattering blow to this man. And the rest of his life now becomes just a deepening of that brokenness. But God had cracked the shell on him, just like he did on Moses. And I don't have time to tell you about what he did to so many other men, but just to mention him, how he did it to Jacob, where he wrestled with Jacob all night, and he beat him, and he touched his thigh, and Jacob limped the rest of his life as a sign, as a reminder of that brokenness. And how he did the same thing to Job when he wiped out everything Job had. And how he did the same thing to David when he drove him into the wilderness and for 7 years let him be chased around by Saul. And how he did the same thing to Isaiah when he gave him that great vision in Isaiah 6. And how he did the same thing to Abraham when he said, "I want your son on the altar." And how he did the same thing to Joseph when he sold him into slavery and let him be thrown into prison. And he did the same thing to Paul when he drove him into the desert for 3 years. Listen to me. God's technique may be a process, but it all begins with an utterly shattering bedrock experience where God strips you of everything you got except Jesus. That's where he crushes the shell so that the life of God can start to get out. That's God's technique. Let's talk about God's target. You say, "Well, I know God's target. You already told me God's target." God's target's my self-sins. Oh, that's right, but I think we can get a little more specific, okay? God's target, listen now. God's target in your life is whatever on the human level is your greatest strengths. Do you hear me? God's target in your life will be those areas of your life that on the human level are your greatest strengths. God, when he's about to break somebody, he goes right for the heart of the matter. Look, God doesn't mess around out on the periphery, friends. God goes for the jugular. I'm serious now. Right for the jugular. We can look at our scriptural examples and we'll see this. How about Moses? What was Moses' greatest human strength? What was the thing that Moses prided himself on the most? What was the thing that formed the nucleus of Moses' self-life? You know what it was? It was his leadership capability, his generalship. Remember, I told you, Josephus, the historian, mentions he was a great general in Egypt. He was a national hero, a national figure. He was a leader par excellence. Where did God shatter him? Right there. He went out and said, oh man, if I can lead the Egyptian army, I can lead this bunch of rabble right here out of Egypt. Come on, guys, we're having an exodus. Oh man, that's right where God broke him. Right where he felt the strongest. How about Peter? Where did Peter feel the strongest? Courage, loyalty, bravery, valor. Peter, right? Where'd God break him? Right there. Lord, though everybody deny you, not old Peter. I'll die with you, God. Right where God broke him, didn't he? God didn't break Peter at fishing because Peter didn't care about fishing. He was probably a lousy fisherman anyway. He didn't break him there. What good would it do to break him there? God broke him where he felt strongest. And how about Jacob? God broke him right at the point of his own cunningness and self-resourcefulness because that's where he felt the strongest. How about Isaiah? God broke him at the point of his personal holiness in Isaiah 6 because that's where he felt the strongest. How about Abraham? Oh, Abraham, it was that son. Oh, that glorious son. The one he had waited 99 years for. That's where God broke him. And David, popular hero, the fair-haired wonder boy. Saul has killed his thousands. David has killed his 10,000s. Where did God break him? Right there by driving him into the wilderness as a despised fugitive for 7 years. And how about Paul, the self-righteous zeal for God that he had? That's where God broke him. I could give you more, but I want to summarize and just say wherever the flesh is the strongest, that's where God will zero in. And the reason God does this, friends, is very simple. God's not just out to rattle your cage. Oh, no. No, God is out to totally shatter your self-resources. And God knows that the most effective way to do that is to strike you at the point where you feel the strongest. Because if God can break your self-life at that point, hear me now, God knows that all the rest of it will come crashing down around you. God won't have to mess with the periphery if he strikes you at the heart. Now, I might just mention to you, God's design is not to radically change you. See, God made Peter the way he was. God made Moses the way he was. God gave them those strengths of personality. The problem is they were misusing them. See, if you're a Christian, your weaknesses are just your strengths that are misused, right? God gave them that boldness. And all God wanted to do is to transform those weaknesses into strengths. Because they were using those traits for the flesh and they were using them for their own glory. And all God wanted to do is get those traits to be used by God's power for the glory of God. And so after the brokenness is over, where is the one thing we remember Moses most for? Isn't it his leadership? But now it's spirit-filled. And what about Peter? What do we remember that man most for? Isn't it his boldness and his valor and his courage? But now it's spirit-filled. And what do we remember Isaiah 4? Isn't it his holiness and his walk with God? But now it's spirit-filled. And we remember Paul for his zeal for God, but now it's spirit-filled. Do you see what I'm saying? God doesn't want to change you. He wants to sanctify you. He wants to take what are your strengths and get them to be for the glory of God, not yourself. And so when God zeroes in on you, you better get ready. God's not going to zero in on something that doesn't matter to you. Oh, no. God's going to zero in on the jugular. That's where he's going to hit you. Third and finally, God's tools. Well, you know, the exact instrument that God chooses isn't the same for everybody. Look, if you were a doctor, you wouldn't give the same prescription to every patient, right? And God uses different tools depending upon the target. Some weapons work better against other certain targets, right? I don't know what your target is, but whatever your target is, God will choose the tool that works best on it. God will deal with you uniquely. That's what I love about God. You're not just a number. God's going to deal with you all by yourself. But there's one thing I will tell you. I don't care what tool God chooses, specific tool. There's one thing that will be in common no matter what tool he chooses. And this is it. That God's tools always involve failure. Human failure. Do you hear me? God's tools always involve human failure. Human loss. Human setback. Human disappointment. Human pain. Every Christian that God ever broke, He broke with human failure. You with me? That's how he did it. How did God break Moses? 40 years of success, did that break Moses? Ha! No way. You know how God broke Moses? 40 years of failure. That's how he broke him. He let him utterly fail. How did God break Peter? Utter failure. How did God break Isaiah? Oh, Isaiah prided himself in his great personal holiness. So you know what God did? God showed him God's holiness. Woo! Man, suddenly Isaiah looked so corrupt, looked so vile, he couldn't stand it. He cries out, woe is me, I am undone. That means I'm destroyed, I'm ruined. Doesn't sound like much success, does it? David, 7 years of utter obscurity in the Judean wilderness, rejected by the very people that had exalted him, despised by all of Israel. That's how God broke him. Paul, the prince of zeal. You know how God broke him? Put him on the Arabian desert and gave him 3 years of inactivity. Can you imagine Paul doing nothing for 3 years? I'm sure that you couldn't have done anything in the whole world to frustrate that man. I mean, his target was that. And that's what God did to him. Now, for you and me, 3 years of activity sounds pretty nice, inactivity, right? I'd trade for 3 years of doing nothing. But I guess the reason God's never given me that is because that wouldn't work on me. I'd love it. So I don't get that. I get some other stuff. All right. Jacob. How did God break Jacob? Why, he broke him at the fords of Jabbok when Esau was coming to meet him with 400 armed men. And this resourceful man had nothing left to do. That's why God broke him. The man was in utter terror. Listen, all the human failure and disappointment and pain had a glorious purpose. All God was trying to do was get these people to depend upon God, to throw themselves totally upon God, to totally give up their human security and their human resources and depend upon God. That's all he wanted. But my dear friends, listen to me. You will never learn that from success. It can't happen. It's impossible. As one man said, Jesus is all you need, but you never learn Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you got. And that's why brokenness and failure come hand in hand. It can't be any other way. It can't be any other way. Beloved, every Christian God's ever used, he's first broken. And God never broke anybody with success, prosperity, health, strength, or human advancement. No, God breaks with affliction. God breaks with pain. God breaks with heartache and failure and loss and weakness and illness. I want you to walk hand in hand with me down through history for a moment. I wanted you to look at some of the men that we honor as giants for God. Some of the women. I want to show you that that's exactly what God did to them. We think of Martin Luther, right? The man who, for all practical purposes, started the Reformation. The reason we're on our way to heaven by faith in Jesus alone is in large measure due to that man. And his bringing that truth back into Christianity in the Middle Ages. And we think of Martin Luther as the great crusader who started the movement for God all across Europe and turned Europe upside down with the gospel. And he was that kind of a man. But you know, we forget that before that ever happened, that man spent a year in the castle of Wartburg where it was cold and deserted and lonely and depressing, where he fought hand to hand with demons and where half of Europe was seeking his life, where he had what we would call, humanly speaking, an emotional breakdown. Where he was so discouraged some days he couldn't even get up out of bed. That happened to him before he ever went out and turned Europe upside down. God broke him with failure. How about John Wesley? We think of John Wesley as the man who turned England upside down with the gospel, started the Methodist movement. Do you know John Wesley's first attempt at ministry was an utter failure? Did you know that? He sailed to Georgia in 1735 to be a missionary to the American Indians. You know how he did? Bad. Bad. He washed out so bad that they chased him out of Georgia. It's true. He had to flee into the Carolinas to save his life. And the Indians weren't chasing him. The settlers were chasing him. That's true. And he sailed back to England totally frustrated and discouraged. That's how his ministry started. It's where God broke that man. Hudson Taylor. We think of him as the great missionary to China. The great pioneer of faith missions, and he was. But you know, many of us don't know that after he had been in China for 6 years, at the age of 29, he became so desperately ill that he became an invalid. And he had to be sent home to England for 5 years. They told him he'd never go back to China. And for 5 years, he lay in a bed in England, as he put it, shut up to prayer and patience, and that's it. That's it, for 5 years on a bed. That's where God broke him. The man we think of is the man after that bed, not before. God didn't break that man through success. He broke him through illness. And we think of Adoniram Judson, the great missionary to Burma who translated the Bible into Burmese that's still used today, who ended his missionary career with such victory and such triumph. But you know what? Adoniram Judson buried his first wife, Anne, in Burma. He buried his first child overboard on the ship on the way to Burma. He buried every single child Anne bore him in Burma. He buried his second wife in Burma and spent most of his ministry in Burma in jail. Almost all of the Burmese translation of the Bible was done in a jail cell with the vermin and the rats. See, we don't think about that. And we think of George Mueller, the great man of faith, but we don't realize that God broke him by asking him to give up a woman that he loved. What an agonizing process that was for him. But God didn't use him till God broke him through you having to give up that woman. And you know what? We sing the great song, it is well with my soul. And we take so much comfort from that. But do you know that there would have been no song, it is well with my soul, if Horatio G. Spafford had not had his four daughters, all four of them, all of his children drowned at sea? Because he wrote that hymn on the back of an envelope on a ship at 2 a.m. as the ship sailed over the watery grave of his children. That's where that hymn was written. We think of Robert E. Lee, although he had a brilliant career in the Army before the Civil War. Do you know Robert E. Lee's first Confederate command was a total failure? We think of Robert E. Lee as this great general, and he was, but his first command was a total failure. In 1861, they sent him to Western Virginia, what is now West Virginia. And his goal, his assignment, was to drive the federal troops out of West Virginia. You know what happened? The federal troops drove him out of West Virginia. That's what happened. And West Virginia was lost to the Confederacy and to Virginia for good. Now, we could debate the merits of that, maybe, but anyway, that's what happened. Lee was a failure. He came back to Richmond. The people, the press crucified him. The people turned on him. They called him Granny Lee because they said he fought like a grandma, not a soldier. It's true. You know what his next command was? Oh, you'll love this. No, his next command, Robert E. Lee. They sent him to South Carolina. You know what to do? To build earthworks along the coast. Now, that sounds like a great assignment, doesn't it? I mean, what are the chances of advancement if your next military assignment is putting up mounds of sand along the beach? That's what his job was. And there were some people who even wrote in the papers then that they didn't think he was up to that. It's true. We think of Robert E. Lee as this gallant figure on Traveler, almost invincible. But prior to that, God broke him by failure in the most coveted area of his life, his military ability. He was a total failure. And the reason he ended up commanding the Confederate Army was a mistake. It was a mistake. It was an accident. Somebody got hurt. And they gave it to him. Nobody expected him to do anything with it. Just kind of stick your finger in the dike until we can get a replacement. But God used him then. Let me tell you about a man who, when he was 7 years old, his family was forced to leave their home. He had to go to work to support them. At age 9, while he was still a backward, shy little boy, his mother died. At 22, he lost his job as a store clerk. He wanted to go on to law school, but he couldn't afford it, and his education wasn't good enough. At 23, he went into debt to purchase a business with a friend of his. 3 years later, his friend died. He spent almost 10 years paying off the debts that he had accumulated from that venture. At 28, after developing a romantic relationship for 4 years with the same woman, he finally got up the courage to ask her to marry him. Guess what? She said no. He had been in love before that, but you know what happened to her? She died before he could even marry her. At 37, on his third try, he was finally elected to Congress. 2 years later, he was defeated. And at that time had what we would call today a nervous breakdown. At 41, his four-year-old son died. The next year, he was rejected for the land officer of the county. At 45, he ran for the Senate and lost. 2 years later, he ran for vice president and lost. At 49, he ran for the Senate again and lost. At 51, he was elected president of the United States. You know who that man was? Who was he? Abraham Lincoln, that's right. My dear friends, that man was vilified and hated by his friends and his foes alike. He was considered a totally worthless human being. He was the subject of cartoons and caricatures of all sorts. And yet today we look at him as one of the greatest men that ever lived, and we wonder where that man ever got the strength to lead this nation through 4 years of the Civil War. You know where he got the strength? From all of that failure that I just told you about. As God saw him through, as God broke him. And my dear friend, as you look at your life as a Christian, I hope what I've shared with you this morning will help you get some perspective on why God's doing to you what he's doing. We say, God, I don't understand. I mean, I gave you my life. I consecrated my life to you. That's what you asked me to do, God. And I gave it all to you. And I said, Lord, I want to be used of you. And I'm all yours, Lord. And look what you do to me. You send me all of this. I mean, heartache and pain and my car breaks and my mother gets sick and my children are hurting. And oh, God, I've lost my job. And why do you do this to me, God? This is not the way it's supposed to happen. Who said it's not the way it's supposed to happen? Some TV preacher? Well, I want to say to you this. Jesus never said that it wasn't supposed to happen that way. Didn't you tell the Lord, Lord, whatever you'll do, whatever you think's best for me, do it? Didn't you tell the Lord, Lord, I really want to be used of you? Didn't you tell the Lord, oh God, I really want my life to count for you? God, make me a powerful servant. Didn't you tell him that? Well, friend, that's all God's trying to do, is do what you ask him to. But we need to realize this is the only way it comes, right like this. It can't come any other way. Nothing's coincidental. Nothing's accidental in your life as a Christian. God's got control of every detail, and God is doing to you exactly what he knows is most efficient in breaking you. And whatever a loving God chooses for you, hear me carefully now, whatever a loving God chooses for you, I don't care whether you choose it or not, doesn't make one bit of difference. Whatever a loving God chooses for you is good. Is good. God has a great plan for your life, beloved. He really does, just like he had for Moses. But God's got to prepare you like he had to prepare Moses, and that means God's got to break you. And you may not want the process, but remember what we said, the product is worth it. So if you're here this morning and maybe you're in the process of a really bedrock experience, I mean God is just shaking you down for all that you're worth. Hey, not going to be fun, but praise God. There's a purpose to it, and the product's worth it. Be encouraged today. And if you're here today and you're past that and you're in the little process of just kind of being broken as time goes on, that's really great that you've got some perspective now. God may give you another bedrock experience, but praise God for what he's done in your life. And if you're here this morning and you haven't had any of this, and I sound like I'm talking Martian, let me say this to you. If you're a Christian, this is what you need if your life's ever going to count for Jesus. If not, you're just going to waltz through this life, and when you're done, you're going to look back, and your impact for Jesus is going to be zip. Oh, you may have a great time and have boats and have cars and just have all kinds of fun, but you're not going to make any impact for Jesus. And I want to challenge all of us, I don't care what stage you're at, to get on our knees and start praying for brokenness. Now, nobody in their right mind prays for brokenness. That's why Paul said, we are fools for Christ. And it'll take courage to get down on your knees and pray, Lord, you break me. Hey, listen, that's scary stuff. Because God's going to do it. And it's going to hurt. But may I remind you, Jesus never said that being a Christian was for cowards. He never said that. I hope God's encouraged you some. Say, encourage me? How can he encourage me with this stuff? Oh, yes, he can. Yes, he can. Because on the other side of all of this is a walk with God and power with God like you've never experienced in your life. Let God have his way in your life, my dear friend. You'll never regret it. It may hurt a little bit, just like pulling out a sore. But when it's all over, you're glad it's done. Let's pray together, shall we? Lord, thank you for teaching us this morning your ways. God, your ways are not our ways. You told us that. Your thoughts are not our thoughts. For as high as the heaven is above the earth, so high are your ways above our ways, and your thoughts above our thoughts. Lord, we would never have thought of brokenness. In fact, even having heard of it, Lord, our flesh doesn't even like it now. The whole concept is repulsive to us, to our flesh. But, oh God, how I pray that you would make our spirits cleave to it. Lord, that there would be a burning in our hearts that says, oh, this is for me and I need this. And God, that you would bring us to the place as a church. Bring me to that place. Bring our elders to that place. Bring every one of us in this body to the place where we, in serious and honest prayer, would lay ourselves open for you to break us. Lord, not because we relish the process. We don't. We despise it. But, oh, God, how we love the product and how we need it. So, Lord, I pray you'd encourage your people today that brokenness is not a curse. It's a blessing. And, oh, God, if we'll just lay ourselves in your hand and trust the grace of God and the mercy of God, then we'll never regret what you do to us, Lord. Encourage us from the examples of these great men, of Lincoln and Lee, of Moody and Wesley, of Judson and Luther. Oh, God, encourage us from their example that the price they paid was worth it, and it will be for us. Yibarechacha Adonai v'yishmerecha. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. Yair Adonai panav eilecha v'chunecha. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. Yisa Adonai panav eilecha, v'yaseim lecha shalom. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. May God bless you.